the Jefferson County Public Health District Number 2, and Jefferson County Board of Health Joint Board Meeting, special session on Thursday, October 18, 2018. This is being officially audio recorded and time agenda of our estimates only. So without further ado, because this is a special session agenda, it can be changed. So we will go right ahead and go forward. The purpose of this special session is a joint board meeting between Jefferson Healthcare and Jefferson County Public Health to review the Community Health Improvement Plan, CHIP, progress. So with that, let's do introductions. And Kathleen, could you start?
I'm Kathleen Claire, Jefferson County Commissioner, District 3, Board of Health, Hard Road Committee, 1% Salish Behavioral Health Organization. Well, that's a little less.
David Sullivan, County Commissioner.
John Austin, Member at Large, Chair of the Board of Health.
Jill Buehler, Chair of Jefferson Healthcare Commissions, and Member of the Hard Road 1%
Mari Dressler, Commissioner, Jefferson Healthcare.
Matt Reddy, Commissioner, Jefferson Healthcare.
Bruce McComas, Commissioner, Jefferson Healthcare.
Case Colf, Public Hospital District Commissioner, and also seated on the board of the Health.
Take this in time.
Oh, good. Kate Dean, District 1, Jefferson County.
Thank you. And may we have the audience?
Yeah, my son is Senator Jefferson Healthcare.
John Walker, Executive Director of CHIP.
Vicki Kirkpatrick, Director of Jefferson County Public Health.
Tom Mott, County Health Officer.
Elise Fonseca, also associated with CHIP.
Lori Blank, Executive Director of CHIP.
And this is
Alyssa Rodriguez, Administrative Assistant.
Do you know Jefferson Healthcare?
My Knox, Elizabeth Peninsula Health Services.
Okay. Thank you, everyone. Well, with that, we will go ahead right into our Community Health Improvement Plan implementation. John, are you going to?
I can have first, as well. So, welcome, everyone. We're really excited to have an opportunity to present to you again the progress that we're making on the CHIP plan. I wanted to start today with a little story, if you guys will humor me to do that. Last night, my wife and I went to see a play in Seattle, and the topic of the play was a community in Canada named Gander. Does that ring a bell with anybody? See a few people shaking their heads in the room. So Gander is a community that it's the furthest east airport on the North American continent. So on 9/11, 38 planes that were heading west to the United States were diverted to this airport. The Gander community has 9,000 people in it, and there were 7,000 people on these planes. So the community had to react in a really short time to care for these people that got off the planes. They had to clothe them, feed them, provide shelter to them, provide services to them. And it was just, you know, it's a play, so how real it is, I don't know. But it was amazing, the work that they did to accommodate those people. It was really dramatic. And there's a couple of examples. The market in the community basically shut off their cash registers and opened their doors 24 hours a day, and anybody, either a community member or a guest in the community, could come into the market and get a toothbrush or food or whatever they needed to be able to do that. And another really neat story is that local SPCA person went through all 38 planes looking for the pets that were in the ship, through the whole of every ship to look for all the pets that were on the planes and took them off and took care of them. So as I'm watching this play, of course, I'm thinking about CHIP. I'm just thinking about how that was a great metaphor for the work that we need to do. I think the people that are in this room were some of the lucky ones in our community that have a lot. And I think some of our responsibility is to help provide for those in our community, like these people in Gander, that don't have a lot. So anyway, it just struck me that it was particularly pertinent to the discussion that we're having today, and it was a really good example of how a community can come together and help care for their community, and I think that's work that we need to do in this community, and we are doing it. I mean, I think that's a big part of what CHIP is. I also want to take a second just to acknowledge my partner, Lori Fleming, who I just feel so lucky that we have the partnership that we do. It's really worked out amazingly well. I just feel lucky every day that we get to work together. And I think a really cool benefit of that is that we're forming, I think, a stronger partnership between Jefferson Healthcare and the Health Department. I spend so much time at the Health Department, I'm sure they're going to be giving me an office and a badge. anyway, I just think it's really helps strengthen those relationships in a really positive way, and I'm really appreciative of everything that Lori does. So, I want to start by just kind of giving you an overview of what we're going to talk about today. We've spent the last 3 months, we've shifted a little bit. I think our focus has really been to start some bigger projects that might make a pretty significant impact in our community. And some of the discussion today will be about some of those projects that you've learned about. I'm really excited about the work that we're doing. It feels like, you know, instead of just ticking boxes on the plan, we're really doing some meaningful work that's going to make a difference for our community. I also think we're really making an effort to get out into the community and communicate the work that we're doing with CHIP and just make more people aware about that work, and you'll see some examples of that later on in the presentation. So as I did last time, I just wanted to start out with a little bit of good news. We, you know, Lori and I try to scan the health data world to see what information is out there, and the University of Washington recently completed kind of a study of the health of cannabis related to congressional districts. So for our congressional district, which is Claflin, Grace Harbor, Jefferson, Kitsap, Mason, and Pierce counties, Jefferson County had the lowest disease rates in the four areas that they studied, and those were, so we had the lowest rate of cardiovascular disease, the lowest rate of Alzheimer's and other neurological disorders, the lowest rate of chronic respiratory diseases, and also the lowest rate of diabetes of all systems in all four cases. So I think that, you know, reflects really well on the work that our health department does, our hospital does, and I think it's an indicator that the work that we're doing is making a difference. So that's, I think, some good news to share with you guys. So this is a very high-level overview of the progress on the CHIP plan since the last time that we came to see you. And I think what you'll see is that the overall increase in activity on the CHIP plan is about 10%. So I think in 3 months, 10% is pretty good. I think it's probably almost more important to share with you that there's a number of activities that we're working on that aren't necessarily in the CHIP plan, particularly in the mental health and chemical dependency area. And I think that's because the landscape has changed pretty significantly since the plan was written. And also we've had opportunities to work in the community in areas that I don't think were anticipated by the work in the CHIP plan. So even though, you know, I think the 10% is wonderful, but I also think there's some amazing work that's going on that isn't even reflected in that. And you will hear more about that, I think, when Lori comes up to talk about mental health and chemical dependency. Also, 315 activities in a plan was probably a crazy amount of activities to try to do so. But all in all, you know, I think we've made good progress on the plan. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the two groups that I'm kind of helping with. The first one is the Access to Care team, and that group has broken into five sub-teams that are listed here on the screen. So it's affordable care and single payer, women's health issues, affordable medications, dental care, and community communications, how to get information out to the community about what services are available. And each of those groups has started to meet and do the work of, you know, making progress on the items that are in the plan. And I think actually would like to recognize Case, who's done a huge amount of work to just help those groups get started, and Frank is participating in several of those groups. So good job, thank you very much for that. And then I want to highlight something that I'm sure you're probably all aware of, but since dental health was a huge issue in our community, and Mike gave a short presentation at our at the open house that was this week, last week. Time flies. Anyway, Mike pointed out, you know, the mouth is connected to the head, which is connected to the body, and it's really important that we get kind of on board with the idea that all of health needs to be addressed. And so we are just really pleased and excited about the work that Jefferson Healthcare is doing to stand up a dental clinic. I don't think it's going to solve all of our problems, but it certainly will make a huge difference for our community when that opens. So we're really excited about that work. The next group is the Chronic Disease Prevention and Healthy Living Group, and that group has split into also into sub-teams. So the first one of those sub-teams is kind of a food and healthy eating group, and I would say the main activity that that group's doing is looking for a community kitchen space. There's a lot of activities that can be done if we're able to add a community kitchen space. It's things like being able to do food demos, and I think a really good example is people donate food to the food bank, but the people who pick that food up don't always know how to prepare that. So it might be a summer squash or something that they're just not sure how to cook. So if we had a community kitchen space, we could do demos for people to teach them how to prepare the foods that we give away at our food bank. We even had some discussion that as we do demos, we might be able to save those meals and then also distribute, you know, fully completed meals at the food bank. The second group is chronic disease prevention, and I think a really exciting activity that's going to happen is that Jefferson Healthcare is going to be starting the diabetes prevention program in 2019. And since diabetes is one of the more significant chronic diseases, and the opportunity exists to prevent that for some people, we're really looking forward to starting that program. Sorry, I've got to drink the water here.
John, while you're taking the break,
yeah.
Have you done an inventory of what community kitchens are throughout the county? So the different...
We are. We okay. have done that survey. And there, you know, there's some activity there. The PEA is considering developing a community kitchen. The board has some land that they would like to do for that. I think getting funding is kind of the next step in that. And we're looking at what the opportunities are to get funding to be able to do that. And then the last one you're probably looking at and saying, what the heck is PT Parkways? So I'll give you just a little bit of information about that. This is coming out of the exercise and fitness subgroup of the chronic disease prevention. And what we're hoping to be able to do is an event that's based on what's called the Portland Parkways Project. And basically, we will be blocking off like a 4.5 mile course. The streets will be blocked off and people can bike or run or walk or stroll or do whatever they want. They can take their pets or their kids or, you know, it's not like the rodeo run where you're really restricted. And the really exciting thing is we try to plan activities in neighborhoods that are along the route and then also introduce people to some of the trails that are in our community that are there also on the route. So we're hoping to do this event in May. There's quite a bit of planning that's taking place. We've been in contact with the police department about blocking off the roads and they're supportive of that plan. And I think it does three things that are really match with the goals of CHIP. So the first one is it really puts the focus on exercise and we want to get people out there walking. It also is kind of the first CHIP-specific event. CHIP is really the one that's sponsoring it, putting the, you know, the energy into it. And so I think we can use it as an opportunity to raise people's awareness about CHIP. And then the last is these neighborhood events. And we've identified, I think, 6 or 7 neighborhoods that we want to try to go to and see if we can get them to do some kind of an event during the walk. It kind of helps get neighborhood isolation, improve neighborhood isolation. So we're excited about that opportunity. I think that is my last slide for a while. So
we'll
I'll turn it over to the board.
So now we're going to move into the immunization work group. We've always known that we have a high exemption rate in this county, and by exemption, we mean those who opt for an exemption to the immunization requirements, which is something we don't have a lot of control over, but sure, we can try to impact it. What we do have more impact on is the out-of-compliance rates for students who are not up-to-date or don't have immunization paperwork at all. The schools have been working really hard to, among other things, provide parents with resources in the kindergarten registration packets, and these efforts have contributed to an out-of-compliance rate at 16% or below for the last 2 years. And then another focus in the immunization work group is the first order of CHIP's effort was to create clarity and efficiencies between each other's organizations and systems that were in this participating in the immunization work group. And now that these fronts have been substantially addressed, this group is ready to go to the next level of community advocacy. Studies have shown that changing community norms around vaccination rates is impacted by messaging, and specifically deliberate messaging that says it's normal for kids to be immunized. So our focus is turning now to the use of social media in ways that support the perception that Jefferson County is a vaccinated population. Then I'd like to talk a little bit, the immunization team, through the facilitation of John Nowak, is working with Trish Pitard, the Brennan Elementary School principal, to carry out a vaccination event at the Brennan Elementary School on November 14th. This is just one effort where we're putting forth our best foot to ensure every child possible has accessibility to vaccination services. In the mental health chemical dependency work group, I'd like to start by talking about a couple of potential resources that are on the horizon. Many of you have met Brian Richardson, who has sought and been approved to join the Recovery Cafe Network. The cafe concept is a safe, warm, drug and alcohol-free space in Lubbock community to anchor members in the sustained recovery needed to gain and maintain access to housing, social and health services, healthy relationships, education, and employment. The program is designed to help people maintain recovery, reduce relapse, and fulfill their potential. Important elements of this work include a focus on free nutritious meals, coffee, tea, lattes, birthday celebrations, daily encouragement, and a robust delivery of the message that you matter. Small loving accountability groups called recovery circles, which offer peer-to-peer support, are included. These are facilitated by staff people, trained community volunteers, or long-term members. These volunteer opportunities allow the members to learn the rewards of giving back, to improve their communication abilities, to develop leadership skills, and to learn to interact effectively and productively with staff. Other members outside and volunteers who spend time at the cafe sharing their gifts. Also, 12-step meetings will be held at the space, and the Recovery Cafe will be partnering with a wide network of complementary service providers to help members gain and maintain their housing, health care, mental health services, legal assistance, and a base of support as they navigate the complex social services system. This concept doesn't seek to duplicate services, but rather to be a place of stability so members can access the services that they need. And then another resource that's on the horizon is we're fortunate to have MCS Counseling's Julie Canterbury step up and offer QPR's suicide prevention training for free to our community. This training is a substantial 8-hour course. It offers 8 hours of continuing education units and typically runs about $150 a person. Our goal is to focus this training in the first quarter of 2019, bringing in law enforcement, EMS, and educators specifically, as well as to throw the doors open to anyone in the community who wishes to attend. We know that this could include parents, friends, neighbors, teachers, ministers, doctors, nurses, office supervisors, squad leaders, foremen, police officers, advisors, caseworkers, firefighters, and many others who are strategically positioned to recognize and refer someone at risk of suicide So when I come around to pick you all up to help get attendance to this, I think you'll remember that list. As a person who's completed this QPR training, they will have learned how to recognize the warning signs of suicide, know how to offer hope, and know how to get help and save a life. And again, we really appreciate Julie Canterbury offering this to our community for free. Some expansions that have actually happened since 2018, or in the time since we were here last, the Ames Behavioral Health Integration Model has been implemented at Jefferson Healthcare. This model focuses on providing both medical and mental health care in primary care and other clinical settings. And then, as this group knows, the offering of these mental services in primary care, it's convenient for patients, and it can reduce the stigma associated with treatment for mental disorders. It builds on existing provider-patient relationships and can improve care for the millions of patients who have both medical and mental disorders. Another positive is MCS Counseling is now providing our in-school counseling around the county. Jefferson Healthcare has trained 25 primary care providers in MAT services through funding from the Salish PHO, and they've also brought a new psychiatrist in-house to the lineup. And then also in our community, we have the Olympic Peninsula Services Clinic. It's a MAT services clinic in Fort Tadlock. This has been set up on the hub and spoke model for whole person care. Some background, the Olympic Peninsula Health Services Clinic is headed up by Anna Filoni and was awarded a hub and spoke grant in 2018 from the Department of Behavioral Health and Recovery. It serves Jefferson and Clallam counties from Fort Tadlock, it's expanding into Forks and Port Angeles. They currently have about 50 patients. They treat with Suboxone and Vivitrol. Patient calls in for an appointment, there's no referral needed. Appointments are offered within 24 hours of contact. They take all insurances, including Medicaid and Medicare, and offer both day and evening appointments. And I want to highlight here how fortunate I believe our community is to have Jefferson Healthcare, who has worked hard to ramp up services for patients needing MAC services right in the primary care provider's offices, as well as a clinic facility like the one that Annie has brought to our county. We're all aware that the stigmatization can cut both ways for a wide range of individuals who are seeking help to recover from addiction. There are people who would feel uncomfortable seeking assistance at a MAC clinic, whereas in the privacy of their primary care offices, doctor's office, they might be more willing to take advantage and take on the challenge. Likewise, a person utilizing a MAC clinic might feel completely out of place in a primary care provider's office. So I'm excited to see we can offer these MAC services in two different environments and believe these two service care organizations that with them, the county has substantially expanded the potential for people to seek recovery services. And then on to the Jefferson Rural Health Network. This is the network that was funded, or the development of the network is funded by the HRSA grant that we received earlier this year. The network currently consists of Jefferson Healthcare, Jefferson County Public Health, Discovery Behavioral Health, and East Jefferson Fire and Rescue. We are in the final stages of hiring a grant-funded coordinator who we hope to have on board by mid-November. This has been set up as a contract role through Jefferson County Public Health and will extend to the end of June 2019. This network has agreed to run with the momentum generated in Anna McHenry's Mental Health Field Response Committee group that began meeting in May 2019 to explore diversion options. Currently, our goal is to take the lead to develop, this network will take the lead to develop a proposal for a jail emergency room diversion option, and then to take whatever we come up with, create it into a proposal, and take that to the January 2020 short session with Therringer. This effort fits well with the HRSA grant's purpose, which is to leverage the purpose, which is to address mental health services in a rural environment, and then also we think that we'll be able to leverage the potential for follow-on activities and funding with this, what we've done with the development grant work. So another highlight is also that we operationalized the work plan submitted with the grant application, which led to us submitting a modified grant budget and work plan to HRSA, and we've got at least a verbal okay. The key proposed modification was to stick with the pre-grant plan to do a community health assessment in 2019 rather than in 2018, which is what the grant work plan specified. The proposed modification also allows us to continue the momentum that we've generated toward calibrating the three counties, Kitsap, Clallam, and Jefferson, their community health efforts. So I want to talk a little bit about aligning the Tri-County Community Health Assessment timing. We've had a few meetings with Siri Kushner and Katie Eilers over at Kitsap, and also OCH's Elliot Petrovsky, and we've generated the momentum toward getting these three county efforts into a calibrated schedule so each county can recognize the efficiencies, primarily during the data gathering phase, and also to set the stage for sharing insights and best practices between the three counties in our region. I think this would be a real positive step forward. So then we have a mapping of the county resources. I'm going to address that in a second. The CHIP roadshow development, which is something John and I keep sort of creating and adding to every time we get a chance to go out and speak and talk about what we do. So I feel like we've got a really good start on that. Back to the mapping effort. This is an example over here on the right of mapped resources that is inspiring the legwork we're doing to map our community CHIP-related resources. You can see that the map has several categories here in the pie slices. And in our categories for those pie slices would be what you see up here. And then we are working so these are the pie slice categories, and then we have the radiating ring categories, which would be at the innermost circle, the crisis services, and then next would be intervention, and then the last outer circle would be prevention and promotion services within each of those pie slices. And so we're working with Kelly Schwab over at 211.org, who generated this map. This is an ACES map, and I think it's for the Olympic region, right? So the goal is to work with him in a way that would allow us to create a similar map tool that allows CHIP to put a face on the data and link to the depth of content that's in the 211's database. The idea would be as well, so the effort is going to be to ground truth and make sure that those resources, the information there is up to date. So in a way, Kelly's getting something from us and we're getting something from Kelly. But the goal would be then so that if you were on our website, you could click on any one of these and go to specific information about that resource and contact information. So we're going to go through the validation of 211's data, and we're working with Tina Hirschelman over at the hospital. So hopefully by next time we'll have something to show you, although I'm not going to promise. That's a big project. And then we had an invitation to go to the Port Havelock Library Training Day, and they asked us to speak on the opioid crisis. And so we put together something that would further the understanding as well as Jefferson County's response to it. It seemed like a really good opportunity to pull both together. So we presented this training last week at the Port Havelock Library staff. They had their training day in Port Gamble. And this training begins by having Dr. Locke take the audience through how the opioid crisis began and how it presents in our county, how accurate are our perceptions about the depth of the crisis here, as well as who's affected. And then we move from that into what Jefferson County is doing in response to the crisis. And what we've included here on this slide and the next are two clips from Dr. Locke's interview. The first where he talks about the opioid crisis, and then the second where he talks about what the individual can do. So we're going to see if this technological gizmo works, and we'll show you the two clips, and then I'll bring it back to show you. He has not actually seen any of this.
The problem, opiates have been around for a very long time. Thousands of years. There's nothing new there. they can be harmful and addicting. But things have actually changed, especially in the last 20 years. We've seen a dramatic increase in opiate use, and part of that has been that these drugs have been very heavily promoted by the manufacturers. Part of it is that physicians have not fully understood how dangerous the drugs are, and also how relatively ineffective they are for controlling chronic pain. So that's been a driver. And then on top of all of that has been what I would call the failure of the drug wars, or the criminal justice approach to treating addiction. You know, we've tried in this country for 70 plus years to criminalize addiction with the hopes that would wipe out. And in fact, what it's done has created this market for drug traffickers to explode the supply of drugs on the market. And in the case of opiates, it's been very cheap, very available Mexican black tar heroin. So especially over the last decade, we've seen a rapid spread of this. And then as the criminal justice system has tried to crack down on its import, that has led to an even more deadly synthetic form of opiates called fentanyl, which is completely synthetic. It's made in a lab. It requires no opium poppies, or it's very concentrated, so it's easy to smuggle. And that's actually becoming the leading cause of death with opiate overdoses, is synthetic fentanyl. So all of these things working together have created a problem that's had huge impact across the country, and including here in Washington State, our neighboring county. You can tell I'm right-handed, right? Rediscover their self-worth and understand that there are people there who want to help them, and help is available. They have a treatable illness. The treatment's not easy. It's going to be a lifelong struggle, but it can be a successful struggle. And those of us who get to work with the treatment of addicts, it's one of the most gratifying areas of medicine. You see people just completely turn their lives around, and you know, get their kids back and go back to work and go back to school and get their families back together and just completely turn their lives around. And the truth is, we don't see that a lot in medicine. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of the things we treat, we're holding the line. We're trying to slow down the progression of the disease. But this is a true treatable disease. So, it's a challenging thing for people to confront their own biases and preconceptions. And especially at the point you may encounter a person. If you encounter them, you know, at the height of their uncontrolled addiction, they're not often a nice person to be around. Right? You know, they may be deceitful and manipulative. They may want to steal from you. They may have lost control of their behaviors. So they're not their true self in that time. It can often take weeks or months of treatment before you finally meet the real person that's underneath there, as the drug no longer has control of their brain. Then you start to discover, you know, who they are and what they're.
So thank you, Dr. Locke. That was video's about 30 minutes, and I've just found the whole thing to be really valuable, and we're trying to think of a way to kind of post it a little more publicly so that people can see it, and if we do, I'll tell you how to do that. It's definitely worth the half an hour to watch it. It's really, there's a lot of really good information, and I think it really, Dr. Locke does a really amazing job of kind of putting a face on the opioid crisis, which I think for a lot of us is pretty far away from our daily lives. So.
What I forgot to say is we have other elements that we want to add to this. We'd like to interview somebody who's going through recovery. There's a lot of resources in the community that contribute to that, and I think raising the awareness of all of them and having something modular that we can sort of piece together depending on the audience that we have. So I think we have a huge base for what we'll be able to do going forward in communicating with our community.
We also have about a 10-minute video that Dr. Steve Erickson did to talk about Jefferson Healthcare's efforts in terms of math, and I think that also is a really valuable video. So
you have to understand what's...
All right. We're coming on the home stretch, you guys. So I want to talk a little bit. One of our goals is to have a web presence for things like this video and some of the efforts that were going on, the 2-1-1 work that Lori talked about. So we've taken some of the first steps. We registered a domain. Our domain name is behealthyjefferson.org, and we're in the process of picking kind of a web hosting for that, and then we'll look at a social media campaign that we can connect with our website. So I think by the next time, I won't promise it, as Lori said, but by the next time we meet, we should have a website for you to be able to look at it. We've had several different agencies in the county ask us if we could kind of house information that might be helpful in terms of health of our community. So I think it would be a pretty open site and allow a lot of information to be posted. And I think we're really excited about this effort and looking forward to getting that piece done. And then this is just some of the community outreach stuff that we've done. We attended the Cosine Days Fair, and it was wonderful to meet with people from South County and talk about CHIP and find out what their kind of health issues are. We'll be in the Jefferson Healthcare magazine that's coming out sometime in the next few days. There's an article about CHIP in that. It's just kind of an overview, but it's also a way to kind of help people understand about the work that we're doing. The video that you just watched with Dr. Locke was part of the training that we did for Padlock for the library staff, and Lori did an amazing job putting all the pieces for that together. It was really well attended, and I think it was a really successful way to help people understand opioid crisis, but also learn a little about the CHIP work. And then the last thing we did was an event called Science and SIPs, which is for the Washington State Teachers Association. It's a series of four classes, and we did one of those four classes. We did a little Jeopardy game, and so I think I'm gonna challenge you guys to answer some of the questions that we did at the Jeopardy game. So I have some questions for you. If you think you can answer them, I'd like you to raise your hand. Don't be shy. So under the category of chronic disease and prevention and healthy living, the answer is 4,400 Jefferson County residents report this food-related condition. Do you need cannot answer something?
What is diabetes?
Close, but no cigar. Anybody else want to take the oral? Okay, Dania.
She's got it.
Oh, good.
What is food insecurity?
Yes.
Oh,
200 points for you.
Wow.
All right. If somebody doesn't get this one, I'm going to be shocked. So this county has the oldest median age in Washington State, impacting access to care. Oh, come on. We are also the sixth oldest county in the United States.
Wow. Oh, my God.
The sixth? We were the tenth.
So, yeah.
We're getting older.
There's more people moving here. We're not getting older.
Yeah. Okay, this is under the immunization category. This vaccine prevents 6 types of cancer.
Oh, HPV.
Good job, HPV. Cervical, vaginal, vulvar, anal, throat, and penile. And I don't know if you guys are aware, but there's been a huge increase in males getting HPV-related cancers. So that's why the last three categories, but it's a pretty significant difference, and it's really now recommended for, I know for a while it was only the women need to get it, but that's not the recommendation currently.
Well, the ads on TV have changed too, to...
Yeah. So currently only about 43% of kids in Jefferson County are immunized with HPV, so we need to do better. It prevents cancer. I mean, why would you get a vaccine that prevents cancer? So, all right, last question. This one might be a little more difficult, but I'll give you a hint. It's in the category of mental health and chemical dependency, and the answer is 40 million Americans.
Overdose every year.
Close, no cigar.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
Overdose every year.
Of 40 million?
40 million.
Have an opioid addiction?
Nope.
No, okay.
Anybody want to take a roll?
Are incarcerated because of addiction?
No.
Have received opioid prescriptions?
No. I'll steer you away from opioid. Does that help? It's the number of Americans who are affected by mental health. Disorders. So it's 1 in 5 Americans. It's equivalent to the population of New York and Florida combined.
Wow. So are they all living there?
Yeah.
There's
a spillover in DC.
There's a few of them in Jefferson County.
I was thinking about the West Coast.
Okay, that's the end of formal presentation, questions, discussion. Yeah, John.
Yeah, I have two questions, John. I think these are yours. And you may not know the source, but I was amazed when you said that we had the lowest level of Alzheimer's disease in our district, considering that we have so many older people and Alzheimer's is endemic with aging.
Yeah.
I'm curious where that figure came from.
It was a University of Washington study that looked at health in counties in Washington State. I actually have a full article which I can send to you if you'd like.
Yeah, I'd like to see that. It's amazing.
I actually think the fact that we are as healthy as we are is even more impressive given the age of our community, because some of the data is age-adjusted, but some of the data is not age-adjusted. And so,
yeah, I'd be curious to see if it is age-adjusted.
Yeah.
And then the second one is on the PT Parkways.
Yeah.
Is there a consideration of having some of our well-publicized runs, like the Rodeo Run and Pioneer Run, to have Chip be a sponsor of those so they'd be on the t-shirts?
That's a great idea. We haven't talked about doing that, but I think that is a really good idea. Yeah. I mean, Jefferson Healthcare is the key sponsor for the Rodeo Run, but I think having some kind of Chip Association.
On the website development,
yeah,
the content of the webpage would be mostly referrals or links to other sources. Or?
Well, I think it would start with some general. Feel free if you want to go. I think we'd start with some general information about CHIP and kind of explain what the mission is, and but a lot of it would be links to other health information that's available. The CHIP plan obviously would be on there. The four priority frameworks would be on there. The community health assessment information. That's just the CHIP stuff. And then you start looking at like 211, you know, what are the resources that are available? And, you know, once we get PT Parkways up, there would be information. I mean, there's a lot of opportunity to do that. I don't know if you want to.
Yeah, I think we sort of think of it as the electronic table where everything community health, you could find a pathway to it. And particularly since in 2019 we're going to do the next community health assessment, and then there'll be a plan developed for that. And I think it would be great to have an anchor spot for all of the communication about what, when, where, why, and then documents that people could use as they go to those different meetings.
Yesterday at the summit, there were some people who presented an IT, you know, pathway, and yeah. I was just wondering if, again, this would be similar in terms of that single point access.
So I think you're talking about the digital kit or something like that, which is a program, probably somebody in this room could talk a little more eloquently than I, but it had to do with a place where providers could speak to or could connect with each other and know where a patient's care is among the various providers that are talking to them. So
it wasn't exactly, I'm just thinking in terms of the way that happened was, it was a wonderful access to wherever you entered.
And so in that way, I think this website would be a portal for our community, for everybody who's, whether you're a stakeholder or you're a community advocate or you're just a person wanting to know, you know, where to go on food security issues. I think we'd like to cover all of that. And that further supports our goal as CHIP to really be that table, literally, where all of these resources are coming and knowing and calibrating with each other.
Just a little shout out, the public health site has a lot of health information on it and it's really useful, and in the absence of a CHIP site, that's a good place to go and look for health information. I go there almost every day, so there's always...
We'll be linking to all of it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I noticed on the map here that it shows Jefferson County all the way over to the Pacific Ocean. And I know public health covers that part of Jefferson County, but the public hospital district does not. And I'm just curious because I haven't heard much in the CHIP groups that I've been participating in.
Really good question, and probably should take that out because we actually made a conscious decision very early on in the CHIP plan and communicated with Clallam County, who their CHIP plan actually covers Western Jefferson County.
Okay.
So we are only interested in the part that's on the east side.
Okay.
And that's probably, we should probably take that out. Yeah.
Just a little bit of trivia about childhood vaccinations, because of course the immunization thing is throughout the lifespan of us. And I know one or two people have already heard this from me. In Australia, where there is a big move to get children immunized, they also get child tax credits. The slogan is no jab, no tax credit.
Wow.
No tax you pay. No jab you pay. So that's a nationwide.
A good incentive.
Yes. You want your tax credit, get your kid vaccinated. Yeah.
So I have a, could you explain the recovery cafe concept again? Just give me a better idea how that would work.
So Brian Richardson is the person who, I think he's an intern over at Dev House, is that right? He's the one who came forward and asked CHIP for a recommendation letter to the network of where this is set up. So recovery, what's the word, franchise?
It's kind of a
franchise.
It's a franchise concept.
They got them in Tacoma and Everett and places up and down here in Washington State. And the goal was to bring a central point where folks who are going through recovery would have a place to have immunity, have a place to be directed to services, have a place to be, have a place to have their meetings. And it looks like he's gotten the okay to be, in fact, today I think he's at a launch, whatever they call it, a launch for it. His goal right now is to raise money for it. Can I tell you something further on that? Did that kind of answer?
Yeah, I just wanted to get a better idea. Of,
okay. Yeah.
One of the cool things is I think we're the first rural county to get, you know, franchised as a recovery cafe community. And I think the next step is really fundraising to get a physical space to be able to do that and figure out what's a good, you know, is that catalog, is that work panel, what's the best place to do that. And then kind of putting together after we get funding in the space. But I think Brian is pretty optimistic that there's funding available in our community.
I think that's
a comment. I was saying, there's some startup incentive and money that's out there. It's one of those things that the community will probably have to pick it up, as many grants are.
I just wanted to add really quickly, one of the thinking behind Recovery Cafe is the recognition that one of the things that leads to successful recovery And I remember a court administrator in a conference that I went to talking about therapeutic courts, is there are three elements that are critical to recovery. And for most people, it means they need to change people, place, and things, meaning they need to not go back to where the environment they came from, because that's an enabling environment. They need to learn new social support, and oftentimes they need to look at the things that are impacting their lives. One of the concepts behind Recovery Cafe, and one of the reasons why the goal is to find someplace in the Hadlock area, not far from the jail actually, is to have a place for someone to immediately, when reentering the community, to go where they're supported, accepted, and have an opportunity to access resources and build a new social circle without necessarily having no place else to go but where they came from to begin with. You know, we have heard anecdotally that, the jail actually made some changes to counteract this, but anecdotally we had heard that the dealers would actually meet the people as they are released from jail. So this is one of the ways to intervene, provide some wraparound support for folks so that they don't necessarily go back to what got them there in the first place.
Does the Recovery Cafe have a transitional housing component?
What they try to do is organize services. So to the extent that there are services available in our county, which I think we all know there's issues with that, they help people get connected with services, but I don't think the intent is that the private bank has its only housing. It's more of a kind of a social place for people to go and find out where those services are.
I'm just curious if in your various groups, you've identified strategies to be able to serve the whole county, and especially populations that are hard to reach, either geographically or just aren't simply disenfranchised and perhaps aren't able to track paperwork coming home from school and some of those challenges that we know families, vulnerable families have.
So one thing we didn't talk a lot about is we have been working in pretty actively in the Brennan community because of just the issues that you've been talking about. And what we actually did was went down and met with kind of stakeholders in that community to ask them what their highest priority health issues were. And I would say this is probably one of our biggest success stories. They identified three things that they felt like they wanted to be able to do right away, and we have made progress on all three of those. And one of the biggest ones was school counselors, which we have to be eternally thankful to the 0.1% committee because they did a lot to make that happen. But I think there's a coordination piece that one of the cool things about the work that we're doing is that we are not Jefferson Healthcare and we are not the health department. We are not, we really represent Jefferson County. That's the work that we're doing. So I think we're both really conscious of that and really try to do that. And I think we definitely have made geographic disparity part of our work. And I think you're probably aware that the economic disparity kind of follows the geographic disparity. So I'm hoping that we're hitting those issues, but I think there's still more we could do, obviously.
Yesterday at the Opioid Summit, it was not a surprise that the issue of housing came up as an integral piece of recovery. And I'm just bringing that back because tomorrow, once again, the city and county will be having some housing discussions, and it's an ongoing issue in Jefferson County that is so intimately related to health that somewhere, I hope again, the conversations that seem to be urgent and happening but not necessarily coordinated in terms of coming up to an overall plan, which is what what the housing action plan is supposed to be, but somewhere I really hope that CHIP can be part of that discussion and maybe again one of the most neutral places to discuss how and where we address this problem with the limited funds that we have.
I hope we're willing and hopefully
to be able to, for that.
Yeah, to be able to do that.
Any other questions? All right, then. Thank you very much.
One comment.
Yeah.
I think there was one other gentleman.
Not a question, comment. I'll do it in public comment.
So, nice segue. This time we will open the meeting for public comment. So any member of the public or commissioner wants to speak as a member of the public is welcome to do so at this point.
Yeah, so my understanding of this is fairly new, but my observation has been for a long time it seemed like CHIP was kind of running in place. And I think with John and Lori at the lead of this now, they're actually putting some action into the plan, which is very nice to see.
Thanks.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who wishes to add to our public comment? If there is anyone who wishes to make a public comment on paper, there is a method on the agenda that you can reach us and welcome any comments that anyone may have. So, yes?
Yes, Elise Monsbeck, I'd like to make a public comment as a citizen. I sit on various groups concerning dental and healthcare. We are having a free dental clinic to the public that is supposed to be on the 2nd and 3rd, I say supposed to be, because we have the van, we know it's coming, the location, that's going to be at the Polk Arena, and the van will be right out there on the cobblestone, and the city has provided the location for free, as they always do. This will be the third time that we've done that. And it gives us an opportunity to see so many people in the community and provide this free dental service for them. And in doing that, before the public, we get to hear a lot of gaps in the healthcare, in the dental, and what is going on. And I do want you to know that the public is very excited that CHIP is off the shelf and that there's now action going on, and I do get an opportunity to tell them about it. I am the team leader for the community awareness and resources for CHIP. So before the public, I get to tell them about it, and I do want you to know there's a lot of excitement and they're very happy, so thank you.
Thank you, great comment, nice to hear. Thank you. Is there any other comment?
Jill, I just want to say thank you to all. It's really wonderful to be able to serve our community and work with all of you, and this really feels a great opportunity for me and others. I'm really excited to be working with Lori and the health department, and just feel like it's really been almost an ideal job for me. So thank you very much for that.
Well deserved and well done. Thank you. Any other comments? All right, then in that case, may I have a motion to conclude?
Second.
Second.
Any discussion?